This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Phil Euro is in for Art, and we have a guest tonight that will knock your socks off. First of all, he's a very, more than intelligent. What I wanted to say was he's an extremely well-spoken man. He is a highly educated man. He has been fighting the good fight for a long time. And we are going to find out the very latest tonight about cold fusion. Now, that sounds very technical, and I want to tell you right now, if you're about to turn the radio off, that this is not going to be a technical discussion, unless you want it to be. Dr. Malov is very well equipped to handle any technical question relative to this subject of cold fusion. But what it is, how it works, well, I saw an interesting video that he produced called Fire from Water. Would you believe that? Well, a lot of scientists don't, and yet, there it is. It makes a lot of good sense, and we'll talk about that in just a moment, and my guest will be with us in just a moment. I wanted to, first of all, wish you a kind and gentle night, and I do mean that. And I wanted to give you a couple of phone numbers, because no matter how many times I say it, there are lots and lots of people who write to me and say, how do I get this information? I tried the website, didn't work, I was sleeping, or I was driving in my car, didn't have a pencil. How do I get the information? It's really pretty simple. You go on your website to artbell. It's one of the best websites possible, and it has all the latest information, talks about the guests, tells you what, you know, in Precy what they had to say, and what their website numbers are, and how to get in touch with them, and all that kind of stuff that you send me hundreds and hundreds of emails and faxes about. So I do hope that you will take advantage of this. It is the best way. If you do not have a computer, then you dial 541-664-8829. And if you want to order one of the programs on tape, you can do that by calling 1-800-917-4278. Now, before I bring on Dr. Malov, we talk on this program a great deal about government conspiracies, the terrible industrial complex that rules our world. And there are many, many stories about how inventions that work, that could make our life easier, are somehow always put down, hidden. The companies, the gas companies, we hear these stories all the time. Somebody invented a way to go 1,000 miles on a gallon of gas. And the guy comes to the gas companies and they buy it up. And that's the last you ever hear of it. You've heard those stories. But I'm in the radio business. And this story is exactly what we're talking about, and we'll be talking about all night. It's how the big guys, the fat cats, create a situation where something that would save us millions and billions of dollars, solve our energy problems, is put aside because it disrupts the thinking of those who say that there are laws of physics and laws of chemistry and you can't break them. Oh, really? That's why I do believe in UFOs, because all these people that say, oh, they couldn't get from here to there, it takes so much time. Well, what do we know about the real world of physics and the real world of chemistry and the real world, for that matter? And I'm not talking about just our world. I'm talking about our universe and the other universes that they're suddenly discovering out there. But let me tell you this story quickly, because I want to get to Dr. Malov. There is a thing that you probably have in your home. It is called FM radio. And you're probably saying, boy, this is really good. I like this. It makes music sound wonderful. And you're probably saying to yourself, when was this thing invented? Sometime after the Second World War. Wrong. Not so. There was a guy, and I think I've got his name right. I didn't have a chance to look it up. I believe he was called Herbert Armstrong. And way back in the 30s, in the late 20s, he invented FM radio. But a guy by the name of General Sarnoff, who was in charge of RCA and NBC, no way, no how was going to let Herbert Armstrong get that FM out into the marketplace, because it was so far superior to AM radio. And so General Sarnoff insisted, we had this investment, after RCA had a huge investment in these radios, and you were if you're old enough, you remember the great big ones that sat like TV sets do today. And what were they going to do, make them obsolete? No, that's not going to happen. So what he did to Armstrong, well, it's a long, long story, and I won't get into it, but what he did basically to Armstrong was ignore him, vilify him, say he was no good, etc. After the Second World War, when television came into being, and Sarnoff knew how much better FM was in terms of sound quality, and you didn't have the static, and it was just in every way superior. What he did was stole it from Armstrong and put it into all the FM sets, I mean, all the television sets. And so all of the television sets you have FM sound. Well, of course, Armstrong was absolutely appalled. He sued Sarnoff. I don't think because I didn't again look this up from memory. I believe that it just broke his heart, and I think he died before the lawsuit came to fruition because Sarnoff kept delaying it and delaying it and delaying it. Why do I tell you that story? Because I don't want you to think what we are going to present tonight, which is horrifying, to think there is something that is made out of water, plentiful, all over the world, excepting the Sahara Desert, of course, that there is something like water, or made of water, that could absolutely put the fossil fuel people out of business overnight. We could drop the price of the fuels that we use from, what are we paying these days, $1.50 roughly, to maybe 10 cents. Look what it would do to the economy. Just think how, and like Tesla, you know, Tesla, the reason we have wires in our homes now is because nobody would listen to Tesla when he said, we don't have to put it on wires, we can send it out over the air. No, they wouldn't listen because you can't put a monitor, can't put a gauge on what goes out over the air, but you sure can. Look at all the meter readers that would be out of business. I'm saying to you that what Dr. Maloff has to present to you tonight is terribly important in the context of the Art Bell Show, because it's another proof of how the military-industrial complex sits on an invention that makes sense, and they run frightened. They run frightened because they may not have the plush jobs, the millions that they make. And then there's the other side of the story, which I'm sure Dr. Maloff will give us first, and that is that cold fusion is a reality. Cold fusion works. It's had its problems, but it's been 10 years since it was discovered by two fine scientists, and, well, there's a big, big story here, friends, and I think a lot of people should be ashamed of themselves to give us the problems that we have today in our society that could be solved so simply. I'm talking about energy problems. But it's another one of those stories like the FM-AM controversy. All right, I'm going to take a brief, I hope it's brief, break. And then I'm going to bring Dr. Maloff in, and we'll go uninterrupted for quite some time. So you stay right there, because what you're going to hear tonight is going to appall you, but it will give you some heart that there is a solution to our problems. I am Hilly Rose, in for Art Bell, and I think, I know that Dr. Maloff has been on this program before, but not for some 4 years. A lot has happened since that time, and I'll present that to you instanter. We are talking tonight about cold fusion. I'm going to take just a moment here to read a few of the credits and bona fides of our guest, Dr. Eugene Maloff, because it would take all of the rest of the hour if I read every one of them. But Dr. Maloff has been the editor-in-chief and publisher of the bi-monthly Infinite Energy magazine. He holds a master's degree of science and bachelor of science degree in aeronautical and astronautical engineering from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. That ain't a bad school. And a science doctorate in environmental health sciences, air pollution control, etc., from Harvard University. He's had a broad experience in various engineering companies, including Hughes Research Laboratories, the Analytic Science Corporation, and MIT Lincoln Laboratory. And as I say, I could go on and on and on. Dr. Maloff, have I done you proud? Have I said the right things? Are you willing to accept what I've said here?
Yes, indeed. You are most kind, and your introduction just now and previously was most gratifying, and Well, I hope it's on target. I think it is.
I think it is, too, sir. And I would say to you that the reason I told the story about the radio situation, which I knew, is because I think many people, when I mention cold fusion, are so concerned that what you're going to do tonight is give us a whole big technical thing. And I know that if somebody calls in, you'll have a technical answer. But I think we need to put this in layperson's terms.
Absolutely.
So maybe the best thing to do to start is to ask you, what the hell is cold fusion?
Well, I think the only way we can really begin to address that is to remind people of how the story began, because many people do remember, and some don't, that there was a big news story around March 23rd, 1989. That's when it all began. That's when the general world became aware of this controversy, which has become known as cold fusion. Doctors Martin Fleischmann, from England, fellow of the Royal Society, world-class electrochemist, and Dr. Stanley Pons, who was the head of the chemistry department then at the University of Utah, they gave a press conference on the afternoon of March 23, 1989. And ironically, your listeners should know, this occurred just 12 hours before the Exxon Valdez ran aground off the coast of Alaska. So there was another big story that happened roughly at the same time. And almost by cosmic coincidence, what they were announcing, that is cold fusion, even though they didn't call it cold fusion, would put the oil age eventually out of business. That hasn't happened yet, as you mentioned. But what did they say at this press conference? They said that they had been working with what is called an electrochemical cell, not to get too technical here. They were putting electricity into a jar of water, so to speak. This water is a form of water that's in all water. It happens to be called heavy water. We can get into what that means later, but one out of every 6,500 water molecules is a heavy water molecule. Okay, it has a special kind of hydrogen in it. And they said, we put this electricity in, and what we find is we're getting heat out over a period of time, and this heat is so large, well, we measure it very carefully, we cannot describe this by anything we have ever seen before. And let's face it, Hilly, these people were world-class chemists. They were getting up in front of international media at the University of Utah, and they were making this rather provocative statement. And they were either right, that is, they had measured their heat properly, or they were wrong, and they had made a gigantic mistake. They said, this heat is so large that it's got to be some kind of nuclear reaction occurring in this special cell, and that became known as cold fusion.
I don't understand. Why is it cold fusion? Because,
all right.
I mean, a nuclear bomb is also cold until
right.
you make it hot.
Well, okay, what is the... We know that we are living on a planet, Earth, that is warmed by the sun. And how is that sun producing its wonderful light, giving life-giving power over the billions of years? Well, modern physics appears to have concluded that it does work on the basis of what is called hot fusion or nuclear fusion. The hydrogen inside the sun, in the deep inner core of it, fuses together, that is, joins, and forms a new element called helium. That's the kind of gas that you get in little children's balloons. And this is a nuclear process, a fusion process, the same kind of fusion that occurs in the hydrogen bomb, the thermonuclear bombs that have been stored up by the Soviet Union, a former Soviet Union, and the U.S., city-busting, deadly weapons. This is hot fusion. And the story from modern physics is that the only way you can get these hydrogen atoms, or actually the center parts, the nuclei of these atoms, the only way you can get them to fuse, join together, is to subject them to incredibly high temperatures, millions and millions of degrees. So when Pons and Fleischmann at this news conference on March 23rd, 89 said, oh no, we have done it, in effect, we have done what you've been trying to do with billions of government dollars for decades. We have done it in a small jar of water. They didn't say it quite that impolitely, but it was just as well as they had said it that impolitely, because that was the implication. We have a new way of generating nuclear energy that doesn't require millions and millions of degrees, such as in hot fusion. And so that, my good friend, was the origin of the controversy. The physicists neither believed it, and they were threatened by it, and they did everything in their power to instead of trying to confirm Pons and Fleischmann, trying to get rid of them.
It's like the perpetual machine, though. How much energy do you have to put in relative to how much do you get out?
Well, okay. Cold fusion is not, quote-unquote, perpetual motion any more than a standard operating nuclear power plant today is perpetual motion. Now, if you took Ben Franklin, brought him here into the 20th century or near 21st century, and showed him a nuclear power plant today and how it starts up and so forth, he would be amazed. Where's the smoke? Where's the coal? Where's the wood? He didn't have much of oil then, except maybe whale oil. Where's that? It's nowhere. What do we have to power this nuclear plant? Oh, he'd be shown these metal rods made out of uranium and so forth. And he would be said, these rods just get hot. Now, is that perpetual motion? Absolutely not. We know that there is a nuclear reaction, a so-called fission, a splitting reaction, going on in those rods. So no one is surprised today when you have pieces of metal that stay hot in a nuclear reactor.
All right, now, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're coming down to the end of this hour, I'll continue right after the break.
Sure.
But you didn't answer my question, and that is, how efficient is it? In other words, that was really the thrust of my question, not perpetual motion. In other words, for what you put in, how much do you get out?
Well, it can be an infinite amount. In other words, in 1 gallon of seawater, there's hundreds of gallons of gasoline equivalent.
Okay, I think that's a good point to end. And we're only getting started, folks. Got a lot of stuff to go through tonight, both from the spooky theory, or spooky, the part of obfuscation and fighting standard science, because they say you can't do that, even though they're doing it. My guest, Dr. Eugene Mallov, sitting in for Art Bell, I am Hilly Rose. This is Coast to Coast AM, Art Bell Show. My name is Hilly Rose, sitting in. And my guest tonight, the dynamic Dr. Eugene Mallov, who is the editor-in-chief and publisher of the bi-monthly Infinite Energy magazine. The subject tonight is cold fusion. Now, Dr. Mallov, as we had to end, you were saying that from a cup of water, you could get many thousands of gallons of, or infinite amount of energy, like gasoline. A quick question, I'll let you go on, and that is, are we talking salt water or fresh water here?
Doesn't matter.
Really?
Let's bring it down to really concrete terms for your listeners, okay? In 1 cubic mile of ocean, what's a cubic mile? Let's be absolutely sure everyone knows what that is. A chunk of ocean, 1 mile by 1 mile by 1 mile. Right?
Mile deep as well.
Right. Mile deep, mile north, mile east and west, and a mile deep.
Okay. So
that's a chunk of ocean.
That's a lot of water.
All right. But no, actually, well, okay, you think it's a lot of water, but...
Well, not compared to the ocean.
No, not compared to the ocean, indeed. We might want to say kilometers instead of cubic miles, because that's the way scientists talk. But our English, North American-type folk are more familiar with miles. So let's say they're roughly equivalent anyway. All right. In one such cubic mile, there is enough of the fuel of cold fusion, or hot fusion for that matter. So there is no dispute about this. Hot fusion, that is the thing that the government scientists have been trying for decades to do. They would say the same thing. So there's no dispute about this. If you can fuse the heavy hydrogen, which is part of the heavy water, in that 1 cubic mile of ocean, salt water, fresh water, whatever you want, that is enough energy in there, enough fusion energy, to equal all the known oil reserves on Earth. Just in 1 cubic mile. Now think about that. That means if we can find a way, either by hot fusion or cold fusion or any fusion of the heavy hydrogens to make helium in seawater, we have solved Earth's problems, because there are energy problems, because there are quite literally almost 1 billion cubic kilometers of ocean on Earth.
That's you know, it's startling, it's hopeful, and it's disgusting at the same time.
Right, because we have the solution.
Yeah.
That is, we have the solution in prototype form. Let us not delude the audience here. There aren't devices now ready to plug into your home and get you off the grid, but there could be. And perhaps we could have had them a few years ago, had this discovery announced by Drs. Pons and Fleischmann been taken seriously and given the credit that it certainly deserves. Now, in the beginning, this discovery could have been a mistake. And believe me, I did not believe it on day one, nor did I believe it, in fact, for about a year after the announcement. It took me, it took many other people, a long time to come to terms with this. I mean, this was a shocking concept.
Well, I'm not a physicist nor a chemist, but doesn't it break the laws of chemistry and physics?
It appeared to, because, you see, the central parts of atoms, the nucleus, the tiny little nucleus that is the bulk of the mass of every atom, every part of our body, okay, these things are positively charged. When you try to bang them together, they don't want to go together. That electrical repulsion force likes repel each other. They don't want to come together. In order to bring them close enough together so that they fuse and the nuclear reactions take over, the so-called nuclear force, you have to have, or so they thought, millions and millions of degrees. But they didn't contemplate the idea that this could be done instead of in a vacuum, which is what the physicists were trying to do for decades. You know, the sun is in effect in a vacuum. It's producing its hot fusion in a vacuum, okay, so to speak. But they didn't contemplate what would happen if you put the hydrogen into a metal, like palladium. That's what Pons and Fleischmann were using. And others after them came and found that you could do it with nickel if you did the right thing. And on and on and on. The original discovery of Pons and Fleischmann, in fact, was but the tip of the iceberg. It is now, this discovery, while not promoted at all by government, in fact, fought by government, the U.S. government in particular, and ignored and disparaged by government scientists, not all of them, but most of them. This discovery now, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as hundreds of scientific colleagues that I have are concerned, the proof is overwhelming. It's not maybe or if, it's 100%. In the first year, it was indeed iffy. Okay? Were Pons and Fleischmann correct? Well, you know, there was a complex story. Why did they have a press conference at all? That became the dominant sin, so to speak, of Pons and Fleischmann, as criticized by the mainstream media, as influenced by the physicists in academia. That's the problem. The physicists in academia did not like this. They didn't believe it. They didn't act like true scientists. They acted like the politicians that they really are.
Let's be fair here. It didn't really work every time, and it couldn't be duplicated in other labs.
That's right. It couldn't be duplicated. Well, let's be really accurate. It couldn't be duplicated easily and trivially on demand, but it was duplicated enough times by enough good scientists that they should have, that is, the academic scientists who began to attack it, should have been more cautious in their pronouncement. You know, it wasn't as though this came out in the best way. Pons and Fleischmann, by their own admission, did not want to make this press conference on March 23rd, 1989. All right? They wanted to work another year and a half. It's a complex story, which I told in my book Fire from Ice, which came out in 91 by John Wiley and Sons. Somewhat of an old story, but I concluded then that it was real. That is, in 91 I did. But it's a complicated story as to what forced them into, or the University of Utah, into this press conference. But, you know, just because a human disclosure of a discovery, which then is problematic in the way it's reproduced and so forth and so on, just because there are those problems, did not give other scientists license to call them frauds, to fudge their own data, as it was at MIT, to take a positive result, an initially positive result, for excess heat, the cold fusion effect, and turn it into a null result. And then get this Department of Energy panel, which was packed with bigoted scientists who thought, on day one, this is utter nonsense, there's no point in even having a panel, but they had the panel anyway, and this kangaroo court of Department of Energy hired thugs, I would like to say. Not all of them were thugs.
I was going to say, be a little careful here now.
All right.
In all fairness, because I saw your film today, and it's a magnificent job.
Thank you.
Let me say to you that what I like best about it is you spent, it's an hour long, but the first half hour is letting all these scientists who didn't believe in you say what they wanted to say. So it isn't a propaganda film.
That's right.
You put all the negatives on it first.
Thank you.
And then came back.
That's right.
Okay, but what
I do get carried away. I have to apologize. I sometimes get carried away with my language, because these people, indeed, have been rather nasty, okay?
Well, what I learned from your film is that some of these very same people on the government panel, after it was all over and voted no against it, then went out and tried to seek government grants to create cold fusion themselves.
You got it. They did.
I don't like it, but I got it.
Right.
Okay, go ahead, Doctor.
Well, let's talk about this panel. And how did this panel arrive to begin with? All right, there was the announcement. It became a big news story. That's the essence of what happened. It was a premature disclosure, but in a way, looking back retrospectively, it was very good that it happened, because it got the world energized and good scientists learned how to do it. They made positive findings, difficult as it was, came to the conclusion that it was positive. Okay, the bad side, the downside was, it wasn't, all the eggs weren't in a line, all the ducks weren't in order, and so we couldn't immediately reproduce it. All right. A guy walked into President Bush's office.
Okay, hold it right there, because I need to go to commercials, and I don't want to interrupt you again. So, and it's right here.
Fine.
Okay, guy walked into President Bush's office, did you say?
That's
or Reagan?
Right.
Or Reagan, was it?
Bush.
Bush, okay. Anybody who's able to walk into a presidential office, got to be important. So you hang in there, please, Dr. Malov, and we will continue right here on Coast to Coast AM, The Art Bell Show. I am Millie Rose, sitting in.
All over the world. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks. To purchase cassette copies of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell, or to subscribe to Art Bell's After Dark newsletter, call 1-800-917-4278. Now, once again, from the Kingdom of Nye, here's Art Bell.
Kelly Rose sitting in, and my guest is Dr. Eugene Malov. And you were saying, Dr. Malov, that a person walked into President Bush's office.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, this is how things got off on the wrong track. And this is by the admission of this now deceased individual, actually a rather important scientist in our century. His name was Dr. Glenn Seaborg. He died recently.
Very, very well-known and respected man.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, he has an element named after him, Seaborgium. I think it's element 106. But in any event, with all his due credit to him, he did walk in by his own admission on the record in an interview on April 14th, 1989, which was only 3 weeks after Pons and Fleischmann made this announcement. And he is on record as having said to President Bush, this is not really fusion. Okay, that is the discovery that everyone was in an uproar about during this initial period. It was not fusion. Okay, now how did he know that? He didn't know it. He didn't know a damn thing. Okay, he just assumed that theoretically it couldn't happen. Of course, many scientists had that same reaction. It couldn't happen, so don't worry about it. They were kind of talking, basically all the upper mucky muck scientists and physicists were talking behind closed doors, and the hot fusion people funded by government grants were talking, you know, this thing has got to be crazy. This is not real. This can't happen. And the reason they thought it couldn't happen was that if it did happen, that is, if the hydrogen was fusing in the metal, it would kill Pons and Fleischmann with radiation. And so if Pons and Fleischmann and their graduate students were not dead, therefore they had to be wrong. That's in essence what they thought. But they didn't even give the experiment the time of day after that. In fact, one of the people who ultimately got on this federal panel, this Department of Energy panel, his name was Professor William Happer of Princeton. He worked on hot fusion for many years. And he was an advisor to one of the the Secretary of Energy, Admiral Watkins at the time in the Bush administration, the early days of the Bush administration. And he said to one of the journalists, I mean, he was reflecting on what his ideas were at the time. He said, you know, I didn't have the heart to tell the Scientific American reporter that just by looking at Pons and Fleischmann on TV, you could tell they were incompetent boobs. This is a Princeton physicist, deeply immersed in hot fusion, shamelessly, in 1993, quoted in one of the negative books against cold fusion, stating on the public record he knew it was nonsense because just by looking at Pons and Fleischmann on television, he knew that they had to be incompetent boobs.
Well, now, these two guys were highly... respected. They had a lot of degrees.
They did. Well, degrees mean, as we now know, during the past 10 years of the cold fusion war, we know that degrees will get you just about nothing. You know, I mean, you can have PhDs stacked up, but you can still not know science 101. And by the way, this is the most incredible discovery of all of the last 10 years. More important even than cold fusion itself, and that is, we now have proved that most academic scientists with PhDs do not know the basics of science, which is science 101. The data from experiments are much more important than previous theories about how the world works. And did these scientists learn this when they looked at the history of Galileo and everybody else who was denied?
I loved in your film where you said that when the Wright brothers went up and they're heavier than airplane, not one newspaper reporter was there to cover it, not one newspaper reported it, because everybody knew it couldn't be done.
Actually, there were a handful that did, but they got the story wrong. But the mainstream newspapers, the New York Times and the Washington Post and everyone, back in 1903 to 1908, they thought the Wright brothers were frauds. And they said so, okay? It took 5 years of flying in broad daylight before there was a big demonstration that was finally called at Fort Myers, Virginia in 1908, no less, 5 years later, before the idea that two bicycle mechanics had solved the problem that the physicists had said was impossible, would never be solved. Okay? This is the same thing, although in a much more extreme form, I would say, that has happened in the case of Fleischmann and Pons and all who came after them. It's very, very, very similar. And so in the video, Cold Fusion, Fire from Water, which blessedly is available even as we speak.
Okay, I'll let you give an address for that.
Sure. But basically, you know, this Arthur C. Clarke reflects, and he is a great supporter of cold fusion at this point. He says he's a little conservative. He says, I'm 99% sure that it's real. The case is pretty overwhelming. But he wants to have a little safety margin there because he's not a person involved in day-to-day evaluation of the data. But he said that, you know, the Wright brothers encountered the same problem. I'm amazed that science appears not to have learned some very fundamental facts of how its own house should be conducted. We shouldn't believe everything that comes along the pike.
Well, I'm surprised you're surprised.
Because
it's comfortable, it's cozy in the university.
It is. You know, it's very cozy because the way it works is the government gives money to universities. It's really not the military-industrial complex that you spoke of earlier. It's the academic-industrial complex, academic-government complex, I would say.
Wait a minute. Are you saying to me, Dr. Mello, and I know you can't prove this, nor can I,
okay,
are you saying to me that the normal fossil fuel people, or the gas companies, that they have no hand in this, that they aren't paying off people?
Let me say this. I actually believe, in this case, surprisingly, my thought is that they really aren't. I don't think the oil people are behind the opposition.
Why would they destroy themselves?
Well, you see, I think they're too stupid. Honestly, they really are. They're incredibly stupid. And also, they're incredibly rich. And if you take a typical CEO of a large oil company, he's making plenty of money. Even if he gets fired the next day, he's going to have a fat pension, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't pretty care too much, one way or the other, what the company's working on, whether it's, you know, coal fusion or oil or whatever it is. They could easily switch to coal fusion if they wanted to, if they were smart enough to. In fact, here's a story from the coal fusion war that will really blow your mind. Amoco did coal fusion experiments, okay? And they had just the right equipment due to oil exploration at the time, a calorimeter, and they hooked it up quickly, and they, lo and behold, their scientists found the excess heat, and this report was much later published. They were ready, set to go to do a major investment in coal fusion research. They had no problem with that. One of their top scientists later divulged this to me. It was not because they were afraid that it would destroy the oil empire. It was because the Department of Energy report, which was negative, quickly negative, discouraged them. In other words, the company executives believed, apparently, the propaganda coming out of Washington. Okay? They were all set to support it, apparently. If this report at a scientific meeting by a top Amoco scientist, he was then not of Amoco, but he was from the Texas area. If this story is to be believed, the government's own report screwed up an oil company's intention to get into this.
And apparently Japan has a lot of companies like Mitsubishi that have
yep.
been fooling around with this stuff because they know that if it really works,
yep.
They could power their vehicles
exactly
without gasoline, and wow, wouldn't
That's
that
right.
be something?
That's right. So look, the kangaroo court occurred. The other fellow, the Darth Vader of cold fusion, as I would like to say, is John Huizenga. Now, he came on, as you saw him in the video, you saw him saying, our panel found out that this contradicted everything we had learned in the last 50 years of physics, of nuclear physics. And he's damn straight, it did. Okay? In other words, what we were seeing in cold fusion appeared to contradict what we had learned over the last 50 years. It was a new environment. It was a solid state. It wasn't the vacuum. Okay? But he was the head of the panel, and he told the top people from Seaborg and Bush, everyone else, okay? This is what he told them when they asked him to be the head of the panel, and he admits this proudly in his anti-coal fusion book. He said, "I told them that it was nonsense. Don't even have a panel." In other words, the very person who became the leader of this kangaroo court told them not to even have a court.
In other words, don't bother me with facts. I've made up my mind.
Right,
I've
made up my mind, but they picked them anyway, of course, and what they got is what, of course, we did have.
Okay,
namely,
doctor, I only have a minute
sure.
here.
Okay.
In the next hour,
yeah.
I would like you, please, to bring us up quickly to mm-hmm. the late-breaking developments
All right.
on this, which is why I asked you on the program.
Very good.
You've given us a wonderful hour of history.
All right.
And now I'd like to bring us up to date. And then, of course, I want to get to callers who are a lot more knowledgeable technically
All right.
than I am.
Okay.
So the other thing, quickly, if you will, how do people contact you with a magazine, if they want the magazine, if they want the videotape?
Okay.
Is there a website or what?
Oh, yeah, sure. We're linked. You've kindly linked us from your website, but that's great. www.infinite-energy.com. That gives you everything. But we have a phone number, which you're calling right now, is 603-228-4516. But there is voicemail, and we have secretarial services.
Would you give me that webpage again? It's
www.infinite-energy.com.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, dot com.
Yeah, energy.
Don't forget the .com at the end.
I got it. All right, doctor, you have a libation of some water or something.
All right.
And relax, because we got a long evening ahead of us, and I wonder, I'm really interested in what's developing now that maybe is bringing us closer to cold fusion.
Okay.
For Art Bell, I am Haley Rose on Coast to Coast AM.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255, 1-800-618-8255, from east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033, 1-800-825-5033. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Billy Rose sitting in for Art, and tomorrow night on the program, Richard Webster will be with us. All the way from New Zealand. We were guest Monday night was in Norway, and Richard tomorrow night is in New Zealand. The topic is feng shui, and you say, well, how much is there to say about feng shui? I don't know, but Richard has written seven books on the subject. Has to do with gardening, has to do with your homes, has to do with your business. This could change your life, friends. It really could. So I hope that you'll be listening tomorrow night. Now, let's continue here with Dr. Eugene Malov, who is the editor-in-chief and publisher of the bi-monthly Infinite Energy magazine. And he's got a string of degrees that, you know, you could spend all night talking about. So he's a very knowledgeable man, a great storyteller. And Dr. Malov, I think now, because I want to get to calls pretty soon, you better tell us what's going on. What's happened? You detailed what happened 10 years ago. So where are we today in 1999?
Well, lots has happened. It's really an overwhelming amount, but let's try to summarize. Basically, by around 1991, I would say, and certainly when I came to the conclusion, the scientific evidence had built up to 100% certainty. You know, the phenomenon were found, okay? It was real, all right? There was huge energy coming out that could not be explained by ordinary chemical reactions, even though there were problems reproducing it. And we also detected nuclear changes. These were not dangerous things. These were things that did not kill people. There were nuclear changes. Okay? The evidence, the scientific evidence built up. So let's distinguish the scientific evidence, which, as I say, was nearly 100% positive by 1991, 2 years after the announcement, from the technological aspects, like what can we do as far as making practical devices, even though we don't fully understand the reaction. And we have to admit to the audience, we don't fully understand the reaction or reactions, plural, which are taking place. This does not mean we have no theories. Actually, it means we have too many theories. So, here's where it stands on technological developments. There are many little companies, mostly in the U.S., but plenty of industrial activity going on abroad and academic activity in Italy, in Japan, Russia, China, so forth. It's all over the world now, France. But in the United States, little companies working on this have seen the effects. And they've sometimes seen them in rather spectacular ways. Sometimes they've even in the face of violent opposition by government academicians, have managed to get U.S. patents, etc. One company has been prominent. It's not the only company. Clean Energy Technologies of Sarasota, Florida. They, with a Patterson power cell, have demonstrated excess heat. Motorola tested some of their cells and in every case found them to be positive. And this used ordinary water and nickel with little beads that they had in their cell, special types of electrodes, and they generated a lot of power. Okay, in one case, they turned the input power off and the water kept flowing through and remaining hot. Okay, it was a significant test. Pons and Fleischmann have found that. There's another company called Blacklight Power Corporation. That company does not like the term cold fusion. It has moved to Princeton, New Jersey area, ironically near the Princeton Hot Fusion Laboratory. And they have a process that appears also to produce excess heat in a big way. So I urge anyone listening to this also to check the Blacklight Power website for further technical information about what they're doing.
Do you have a website address?
They do. Blacklight Power, one word, Blacklight, one L-I-G-H-T, power.com. Dr. Randall Mills, who's both Harvard and MIT credentialed, he believes that the cold fusion reaction, which I say he doesn't like that term, he has his own theory as to how this works. He does admit there are nuclear changes, but he has produced, to my satisfaction, data that show excess heat from electrochemical reactions and also reactions that are occurring at much higher temperatures in gas. We call this gas phase. In other words, things that would use no liquids at all but derive from the hydrogen in water. There's a company in Massachusetts called Jet Energy Technology, and that is by Dr. Mitchell Swartz, another MIT graduate, and he has excess energy in the form of nickel light water systems. There's a company in Salt Lake City called Eneco. They have interesting gas phase type reactions. Now, recently, another direction has occurred, which might be the quantum, might be the quantum leap that will boost, that could conceivably boost cold fusion very rapidly. A man by the name of Dr. Les Case, another MIT guy. God, MIT guys are in this picture big time, even though MIT played a negative role as an academic institution.
Yeah, but it's a pretty good school.
Oh, yeah, it is. I'll agree with that. I'm proud of being an MIT graduate. I'm not proud of what MIT officials did to cold fusion, but I'm proud to be a graduate. Dr. Les Case in New Hampshire has come up with a method of doing cold fusion. And what he calls it catalytic fusion. He puts something in a stainless steel cell. He puts catalysts in there. He, like an Edison, found the right catalyst. They have a little bit of palladium and carbon, and you put it in a cell, and lo and behold, when you put this heavy hydrogen gas in, it creates what looks like excess heat coming out of it, and also, and most importantly, helium production. Helium, which is the very nuclear product that the anti-coal fusion people said, show us the helium. In 1989, they said this. Show us the helium, and then we'll believe it. Well, here's the helium. It's there. Russ George of Saturna Technologies on the West Coast, he has confirmed that at SRI International, to my satisfaction. Dr. Arata in Japan has confirmed a similar type of helium-producing reaction with palladium. In other words, fine particles of palladium in a special kind of cell producing helium and heat. Now, mind you, Dr. Arata in Japan is a hot fusion man, but he had the guts to test cold fusion and find results, spectacular results, publish these results, and of course, the hot fusion people in the U.S., with their government funding and so forth, don't want to hear about this.
Okay, so let me understand this now. You've got something that is technologically, if that's the word,
yes,
going to produce tremendous effects. We haven't touched ecology so
right.
far.
You know,
we could say coal burning and oil burning and all this pollution in the air would go away.
Completely. Completely.
Completely. All right.
Completely. In other words, we will have, in the cold fusion age that I predict will emerge out of this, we, you know, as a person who has studied a bit about the history of science and technology, as my colleague Jed Rothwell certainly has, I can tell you that the logical conclusion of this can only be one thing. There is only one possibility, in my opinion, that will come out of this, and that is the fossil fuel age will be ended. The only issue that remains, in my opinion, is that how fast is this going to happen? This could, in my opinion, have happened much earlier, which is why this is so disgraceful, if instead of belittling it and turning it into a joke and making people so outraged, such as Dr. Pons himself, who changed his citizenship to that of France. He did not like being called a fraud by the U.S. Scientific establishment. So he left the country, okay, and he became a French citizen. But the only thing that is an issue, in my opinion, is the time scale of this. Now, government is still funding hot fusion. Hot fusion, in my opinion, is a complete white elephant. It was a noble cause, and it learned a lot about plasma physics, and there are a lot of people still working on hot fusion whom I admire very much, okay, such as Dr. Michael Schaefer from General Atomics on the West Coast. He had the guts on national radio to stand up and say a few weeks ago on Ira Flatow's show, Science Friday, on NPR, when Russ George was talking about his cold fusion experiments, that this type of experiment producing helium-4 was worthy of investigation. There aren't very many hot fusion scientists who will say things like that.
Okay, so what you're saying to me is that the government is putting its money into hot fusion.
Yes.
No money is being put into cold fusion.
Right.
But individual people are willing to put their money in.
Yes.
And when they find something that really, really works, gangbusters, which we're very close to,
yes,
then they'll become multimillionaires, and the
That's
government
correct.
Will probably tax them is about what will happen here.
That's right. Well, I think this will be an era of virtually free energy. People laugh when they say, when you use the term free energy. It does sound provocative, but it will be. That is the implication of cold fusion. The power levels are so, I mean, the energy release per mass of fuel is so great that for all practical purposes, it will be free.
All right, Doctor, I'm going to stop here for just a brief couple of moments, and then we really need to get some callers who may understand all this stuff better than I do. But I understand that there are benefits to the environment, to our pocketbook, a lot of other things. We'll talk about it right here on Coast to Coast AM, the Art Bell Show. I'm Hilly Rose sitting in.
The wildcard line to the Kingdom of Nye is open at 1-775-727-1295. That's 1-775-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
And Hilly Rose sitting in for Art. My email number is hrose@premrad.com. And our fax number is 888-226-4430. And while we're giving out all these numbers, Dr. Malov, you may or probably should give out your website again because people may not have had a pencil to write it down or something.
www.infinite-energy.com, and the phone number is 603-228-4516. That's here in New Hampshire, but there's voicemail and so forth. There's a fax number, by the way, 603-224-5975.
And what will happen if they call this number? They can subscribe to the magazine or argue with you?
Subscribe to the magazine, Infinite Energy, $29.95 for 6 issues a year. And the videotape, Cold Fusion, Fire from Water, many other educational
Okay, that things. Fax number 224-58, and I didn't get the last two numbers.
The fax number is 603-224-5975.
Okay, let me get to a caller here, and we'll get more information as the evening goes on.
Thank you.
Let's see, where do you want me to go? Line, okay. Let's talk to Jeff in Boston. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Now, a couple of questions to your guest, and they are you willing to contact survivalist groups about this idea to get them using this idea based on their need to use this as a way of perpetuating this idea more? And the second question is, are you in favor of people taking longer vacations to allow room for faux employment so that oil company workers can find other employment?
Okay. Well, I don't think that's the subject here, but you can certainly go with the first one. Thank you for the call.
Well, the survivalists. You know, as I want to emphasize, there is no device right now today, to my knowledge, there may be, but I don't know where it is, okay, that is a, other than, let's say, solar power or wind power or geothermal, that will provide you free energy or virtually free energy. Those sources have problems. Cold fusion is still in development. Now, the beauty of cold fusion is that it's a very intense, concentrated power source, so that when it does get developed into technology, which I hope will be in the next few years, it could happen, you know. This, we're talking about power densities in the kilowatts per cubic centimeter range. This is a lot of power. So that when you have such small sources, something the size of your fist or a gallon jug or whatever could power a house or a car, okay? This is very important stuff, but we do not have it operating in such fashion right now.
In other words, it's in the labs, it works in the labs, but it's not on a commercial basis.
Correct, and it is prototype form. There are some cases, and they are in dispute. Certain of my colleagues will dispute certain performance levels, but that's fine. We have debates within the cold fusion field. There are devices that have reached, in my opinion, already total power output of kilowatts. But, you know, they are not regular. They are not fully repeatable yet. Once they are, and I'm convinced they will become that way in a few years through work, then I think the survivalists indeed will have what they want. People will be off the grid completely. In any woods, forest, cave, a mine shaft that they want to go down, they will have their own power source and it will not pollute.
Okay. Let's talk to Davida in Encino.
Hello, Philly. Thank
yes.
you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to talk about something concerning the shooting in Colorado?
No, it really isn't because I have a guest on now.
Oh.
Okay. I'm sorry on that. Well, let's see. Let's go to... Rick in Seattle. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Many scientists have reported serious problems reproducing any heat.
Yes, they have.
And there has been a lot of research into what might be contaminating the palladium or
yes,
the deuterium.
Yes.
And what the exact properties or refined methods are necessary to reproduce the reaction.
Right.
And there haven't been a lot of clear conclusions. Why has it been so difficult to get consistent raw materials, and how can scientists be sure that the raw materials they have will replicate cold fusion?
Well, you brought up a number of very fine points.
To be answered in 60 seconds.
Right. Indeed, the problems of materials, the purity, the structure, the crystal structure, etc., is a major issue in cold fusion. However, there's a way of finessing it. For example, very thin films are found to be very good for cold fusion and help get around some of those difficulties. So there are many hopes right now in this wonderful free enterprise development of cold fusion, not supported by the government at all, interfered with, in fact, by the government. There are many possibilities that these difficulties with materials will be cleared up in the coming several years. Let's hope. Let's pray.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Dr. Mellov, once again, we're at the bottom of the hour, so if you just relax for a few moments, we'll
okay.
come right back to you and take a lot more calls. A lot of people want to talk to you. This is Hilly Rose sitting in for Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM.
Love's your mom, love's Jesus, in America too, she's a good girl, it's crazy about Elvis, loves horses, and her boyfriend too.
All over the world, this. Is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
It's a long day living in Reseda. There's a freeway running through the yard.
International callers may reach Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye by first dialing the access code for your part of the world. Then, 800-893-0903. That's 800-893-0903. Now, here again is Art Bell.
Philly Rose in for Art, and my guest is Dr. Malov, Dr. Eugene Malov, talking about cold fusion tonight. And before the hour is out, Doctor, I'm going to ask you to once again, because so many people tune in and tune out for various reasons, I'm going to ask you to go through a simple explanation of how cold fusion works. But let's do that a little bit later.
Okay.
You know, right now I've been sitting here thinking, boy, I don't know whether I'm upset because the federal government could be spending all this money instead of in Bosnia and in Kosovo. They could be spending all this money developing this source that could change our lives in such positive ways. But the other part of the coin is, if the government did do that, you know damn well that they're going to screw it up and make, you know, stand in the way of the long run. So maybe it's better that private industry does do this.
I believe so.
Yeah. The other thing, I got a question here on a fax from somebody, which looks interesting, and you may not know anything about it. This man's in Albuquerque.
Right.
And he says, please ask Dr. Malov if he is familiar with Dennis Lee's over-unity apparatus. I don't understand this. I cite a cold fusion type. Mr. Lee claims that in 1999, his company will install 1 million of these for free in homes across the nation. Do you know about this?
Well, I've heard of Dennis Lee, and he does go around the country promoting the idea of his various technologies. I have not investigated them personally, so I don't wish to comment on them. I am a bit unhappy with what I've heard so far, but I'm willing to give him at least some breathing room. I mean, if he has a device that we can test at our new energy research labs here in Bow, I would be delighted to receive it, and I would be delighted to write up a report for anyone to see that says this device, which he claims are going to be installed in, you know, millions of homes, is real. Okay, let's get it tested. But I've heard, the negative that I have heard about Dennis Lee is that he promises things and doesn't deliver them when he says he's going to. So I'm willing to cut him some slack, but I have not been happy so far with what I've heard. That's about all I can say.
All right, that's good. You mentioned Bow, and people are sort of wondering what that is.
Bow is a town in New Hampshire, right near the capital, Concord, the live free or die state. Okay.
Okay, that's your laboratory.
We have a publishing office in the town of Bow, which is right near the capital, and we also have a new energy research lab where we do test devices, cold fusion and otherwise, and we try to come to conclusions as to whether they are real, producing excess energy, not producing excess energy, having increased efficiency, etc. We have found some devices, to our dismay, that we were originally very enthusiastic about and then published data suggesting that they were not as good as we had thought, or not anything. So, you know, we try our very best to maintain integrity. I mean, that's what we stand for. If you don't have integrity intellectually, then you have nothing.
Doctor, what is the end product of what you're trying to do? And I mean it in this sense.
Mm-hmm.
You say that, yes, it's a technology whose time hasn't yet come.
Well, the time has come.
But it's not, it isn't to perfection yet.
It's come in the sense that, okay, the transistor was announced in 1947 at Bell Labs, and then there was some years of development and all kinds of problems producing it and using it and so forth. It's at the state of the early development of the transistor, except we have a war against the transistor, okay? We have a war against cold fusion by people making fun of it. So that clearly gets in the way of open-minded consideration, discussion at scientific meetings, and so forth. For example, we had a meeting scheduled, and fortunately it's been rescheduled, called Conference on Future Energy. And this meeting will be held at the Holiday Inn in Bethesda, Maryland on April 28th, 29th, and May 1st, okay? But it was originally going to be at the State Department, the U.S. State Department, and then a bigoted scientist there found out about this meeting that someone else had arranged, and he managed to get it kicked out. It was just to be an open-minded discussion of some of these technologies. The State Department was not ratifying the technologies, but they could not have this in the house of the sacred bigoted physicist, and he is now going to be investigated, thankfully, by those who did not appreciate the fact that he pulled strings to have a scientific meeting moved. I don't know how we got on that topic.
I'm wondering whether you're going to get sued here.
We have, it's on record.
No, your comments, your colorful comments, I think,
all
could
right.
get you in trouble, Dr.
All
so
right.
I'm just but I will say to you...
Oh, he has
I,
colorful comments to us, so we're
okay.
for tap.
I'm only saying to you that anybody with a closed mind that says, no, we can't discuss it, that's ridiculous.
Right.
But what I was ultimately trying to get at is, you've named all these various commercial companies
sure.
that are trying to perfect this.
Yep.
Now, I realize you're the publisher of the magazine, but you've got your own lib. Are you in the race? Are you trying to get something going?
I'll tell you what we aspire to do. We aspire to tell the truth about cold fusion and make cold fusion happen. Okay? We are not the original inventors of the cold fusion process. We try to examine things, and we are all for what we would call demonstration devices. Indeed, when we have our hands on very reliable demonstrations that can be sold to the public as illustrations of the cold fusion or related processes, we will do that. In fact, we do sell one such unit now, but we only offer it in terms of a research technology. It's called a plasma electrolysis device that produces some very interesting anomalous effects, we believe, and we do sell that for research purposes. When we see a cell that will produce reliably excess energy that we can guarantee, okay, then we will sell that. And we do believe that we are approaching within, let's say, 6 months or so, or perhaps less, such cells that could be sold to the public so that they will believe this phenomena, scientists will believe it, and instead of accepting propaganda by government scientists and academicians, they will see it for themselves and act accordingly.
Heavy water. Can I go to the drugstore and buy some?
Not the drugstore, but a chemical supply house will easily provide you with heavy water. Heavy water is part of all water. It's very abundant on Earth.
All right. Let's go to Gene in Seattle. Good morning, Gene. Hello? Are you there, Gene? Okay. Well, we'll just have to go elsewhere then and go to Joanne in Sarasota, Florida. Good morning, Joanne.
Dr. Mello, I find this most interesting. I used to work for Arabian American Oil Company. You know who they are. And I used to listen to the Tesla Society when they were on the radio, and I have two questions.
All right.
Wasn't there a man that ran a car on water? I thought I heard him on that program. And the second question is, didn't the Caterpillar Company buy a patent on this?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. First of all, no one to my knowledge has run a car on water, all right? By the way, cars can be propelled by hydrogen gas. Ordinary hydrogen gas, obviously, combusts, okay, and produces water. You combine hydrogen with oxygen, you burn it, and it becomes water. So it is possible to break down water and get the hydrogen out of it and run a car on hydrogen. If that is what you mean by running a car on water, that has definitely been done. But it takes more energy to produce that hydrogen than the hydrogen will give you back. So you have to make that hydrogen, the power of the car, by something else. There was a man by the name of Stanley Meyer, and I did visit his lab some years ago. He had a dune buggy, which he claimed worked, was powered by water. But my own assessment of Meyer was, and he now is dead, is that he was a very paranoid individual, and he did not have what he said he had, but frankly, it is impossible to tell whether he had what he said he had. He was acting in such a strange way, but may he rest in peace nonetheless. So we don't have water-powered cars yet, but we will. Let me tell you what Dr. Randall Mills said in issue 17 of Infinite Energy Magazine, a lengthy interview. He's with Blacklight Power Corporation. He doesn't believe the mainstream explanation of cold fusion. But he said, according to his theory of how it works, one tank of water, that is 20 gallons, let's say, in a car, would run that car, 200 horsepower engine car, would run that car 100,000 miles, according to his estimate of how much energy is in water. Now, that's a lot, okay? Mm. Cold fusion scientists who are more mainstream would say that a single gallon of heavy water extracted from water would run a car 55 million miles. But between 55 million and 100,000, I could care less. The energy is free, and that's all that matters when it's developed.
Okay, you had another question, Joanna?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Caterpillar company, I heard this. I
yes.
thought...
Let me address the Caterpillar thing.
Yeah.
A man by the name of Gunnerman in the state of Nevada has a fuel called A55. It is literally 55% water, and the 45% is other fossil fuel, like naphtha or diesel oil, what have you. And he can make a milky white solution of this water that, can be burned. So there is, in effect, a fuel that is largely water that can be burned. But it doesn't, to my understanding, from colleagues that I talked to at a company in Cambridge called Quantum Energy Technologies, an ex-MIT professor, Keith Johnson, who is in that company, is working on technologies like that that may be superior.
Okay, we are having to move along here, so we'll come back and take more calls and get an explanation of heavy water, cold fusion relates to heavy water. From Dr. Eugene Malov in just a moment, sitting in for Art Bell, I am Hilly Rose. Hilly Rose in for Art Bell. My guest tonight is Dr. Eugene Malov. And, Doctor, you do such a good job in telling these stories. I just wondered if you could give me a Reader's Digest version of how cold fusion works.
Well, if I could tell you exactly how it works, I'd be on my way to Stockholm to win a Nobel Prize.
Hmm.
We don't really know how it works, but we can give you some idea, okay, of how people think it works. We know that it works, okay? And by the way, there are many things that work that we don't understand. Even modern physics, which knows that high-temperature superconductivity works, no one is disputing that, it is highly reproducible, they are still debating how that works, okay? So cold fusion relates to processes that happen when you have hydrogen in contact with metal. And what happens there might be something like this. In the case where helium is produced, okay, something happens to allow nuclear fusion of the heavy hydrogens, heavy hydrogen nuclei, to form this helium. But it comes out as helium, not as deadly radiation or highly energetic particles that would kill you. It comes out in a benign way. You might say it's a solid state fusion reaction. That's one of the ways that we think cold fusion works. The other way is by changes to the very atoms of the metal, such as what we would call transmutation, which sounds an awful lot like alchemy. And in fact, it is a bit like modern alchemy. We have now seen in the metals of some cold fusion cells, such as the palladium, the nickel, the gold, what have you, we have seen new elements appear that look like other elements inside the metal are splitting, fissioning. You might call it cold fission in a way. Other people like Mills and Dr. Keith Johnson, formerly of MIT, have other theories to explain cold fusion, which have to do with exotic effects occurring in the electrons of these atoms in the metal. So we really are babes in the ocean, just wading into this cosmic ocean and trying to figure out what this is. We know it's real, and we know that it occurs in a variety of systems, and it is very powerful. That's the key point. It is not like ordinary chemical combustion.
All right, but I'm confused here. I keep hearing you talk about the metal, but you haven't said anything about water.
The hydrogen in water, okay, to simplify it really to its most basic essence, right? The hydrogen in water, water is H2O, two hydrogens, one oxygen, all right? Or if it's heavy hydrogen, it's, you know, two heavy hydrogens plus oxygen, D2O. That hydrogen is the fuel, so to speak, we believe, of the cold fusion reaction. But it's not the kind of reaction that you get by just burning the hydrogen, because that's a very weak reaction. Sure, it powers the space shuttle, but it wouldn't power the space shuttle to the nearest stars. Okay, what we're talking about in cold fusion is a reaction that is thousands to millions of times more powerful than ordinary chemical energy. That's what we're talking about. Something immensely powerful, still of unknown explanation, but of characteristics already reported in the literature that shows that this hydrogen is undergoing some kind of new reaction previously unknown to modern science, that is very, very important.
All right, let's go to Jeff in Birmingham. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. I was reading in the May, I believe it's May 1998 Journal of Physical Chemistry B, about graphite nanofibers that had a great affinity for hydrogen. This was on the Learning Channel.
I've heard that.
And this was developed by Terry Baker of Northeastern University.
Uh-huh.
And I can't help but wonder if something like that could be used to make a cheater fuel cell, and you could actually perhaps make a feedback loop. As it produced the water, it also produced electricity. Mm-hmm. And you could maybe, you know, the hotter it gets, the hotter it gets. And besides you with a fuel cell, that would also be very great for spacecraft. And with
right.
that immense affinity to hydrogen, from what I understand, oxygen just along for the ride and water. If you could have a container that could hold a vast amount of just hydrogen by itself, because from what I understand, this small container, it can hold more just an empty one by itself could, and it doesn't have to have the super low temperatures
right.
that oftentimes hydrogen has to have, but it does require high pressure, and all you have to do is release it.
Okay. Well, so you put in, my good friend, you've put in a lot of thoughts here. And I just want to say that what you're talking about is an interesting effect that I've heard about, but it appears to me that you're talking still about conventional chemical energy, even though stored in a very unusual way in small carbon tubes or something that are nanotubes. But I can't emphasize this point enough about the difference between chemical energy and nuclear-like energy. Okay.
My point was it might be a good repository. It might help cold fusion research perhaps in different ways.
Indeed.
And one last question, if I may.
Sure.
Are you the same individual who wrote the Starflight Handbook?
I did, yes, indeed.
Well,
I'm the author of the Starflight Handbook, I confess.
And that is a nice piece of work. Now, I hope
Thank you. Release
perhaps a future updated version on this.
Absolutely.
And to me, the idea of a vast source of power that could help take us to the stars is
yes.
something that I just find amazing. But do see if you can't look up. I forgot what week. I think it was a weekly
mm-hmm.
edition. It was the May 1998 Journal of the Journal of Physical Chemistry B, and something like that.
Well, my friend, I'm out of time here. Thank you for the call.
Sure. Thanks.
All right. I was just thinking, Dr. Malov. Somebody said to me that no scientist can really explain electricity. Is that right?
That isn't
right. If I'm wrong, then I'm wrong.
No, you know, what our understanding of electricity is simply this, in wires, for example.
In 30 seconds.
It's just electrons flowing in a wire, they're flowing because something such as a battery or a generator is producing the flow of electrons in wires. What electrons are, though, is a matter of contention.
All right, Dr. Eugene Malov, my guest, we'll learn a few more things in the next hour we never knew before. I am Hilly Rose, sitting in for Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM.
Art Bell is taking your calls in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Hilly Rose in for Art. My guest is Dr. Eugene Malov. The subject is cold fusion. And I want to remind you that our fax number is 888-226-4430. And my email number is hrose@mrad.com. Tomorrow night on the program, we'll be talking about feng shui. If that's the way it's pronounced, I'm not sure, with Richard Webster, who is has written 7 books on the subject. So lots to talk about, something that definitely could change your life, as cold fusion could change your life if they just get it to a point where it's commercially viable. And that's probably a point I've been meaning to ask you, Dr. Malov. And by the way, I should tell people that Dr. Malov is the editor-in-chief and publisher of the Infinite Energy magazine, and has his own lab in New Hampshire and a lot of other good things. But the question here, and it just went clearly out of my mind, commercially viable, that's the point. When they do this, can it really be commercially viable?
Absolutely. You see, we have to adopt a new idea. You see, currently the idea of energy in our civilization is that you pay for it. Okay, you go to the gasoline station and you put it in your car and you pay for it. Okay, you have a meter on your house metering electricity or metering natural gas coming in, or you pay the oil delivery truck, whatever, or you buy wood. Now, in the cold fusion age, cold fusion new energy age, you're going to pay for the devices that produce the energy. You're not going to have free devices, okay? The devices that they install in your home that you will buy from Sears or Kmart or Walmart or any place are going to cost some money. I wouldn't expect them, by the way, to cost a lot of money, any more than, let's say, a normal oil burner. Replace the oil burner for a few $1,000, put your cold fusion or new energy apparatus in, and you are detached from continual payments of oil. Now, there might be certain elements in there, certain catalysts, certain other things that might need to be replaced, but the basic fuel charge, so to speak, would essentially be zero. I mean, if we're talking about water or even heavy water, the power, the ability of that fuel, so to speak, to produce energy is so immense that for all practical purposes, it's zero cost.
So it's I realize it's not comparable, but it's sort of like a water softener in your home. Once you buy it, there it is.
That's it. Well, it's power, for example. Solar power is a perfect paradigm for that. You put solar cells on your roof. They generate electricity, right?
Yep.
And you've paid for them once. You're not continuing to pay for the sun's rays, okay? Now, the disadvantage of solar power is you have to have large arrays. The sun doesn't shine all the time. Yes, you can store the energy up. There are cloudy days, there are snowy days, etc., etc. Cold fusion will be oblivious to cloudy days, nighttime, whatsoever, and they will also be small, so you will be able to have a cold fusion-powered car. It is very difficult to have a solar-powered car, although they have been built. They are very light and flimsy.
Well, somebody's going to have to figure a way to make money on this.
I mean, they will.
They're probably going to have you go to the drugstore to buy the heavy water for them.
Oh, well, the government, I'm convinced, will, they have a fuel tax now, right?
Yep.
So when the cold fusion age breaks out, as I expect it to, they will find a way to tax the energy use. I hope we prevent them from doing that, and I suspect we will in a more libertarian age. Which I also hope will break out, we will have no government payments for taxes on our energy use. But they will try to find a way to tax it, believe me.
Yeah, it's got to be. Of course, this will now do away with energy lines and all this other visual pollution.
Visual pollution of power lines all over the place, high tension lines, by the way, in the Northeast here and in Canada and so forth, when we have these ice storms, we do have very significant outages, and that will be eliminated when central power stations are a thing of the past, and they will be.
Hmm. And we're not polluting the skies as we're doing now?
That's right. The carbon dioxide pollution and fine particles pollution from the burning of coal and oil, all this will be a thing of the past, and people will look back on this much as we now look upon the horse and buggy age with somewhat amazement that there are actually cities clogged with horses putting manure all over the place. And this will, as I say, it'll be a bygone era.
Do you think that there's going to be an improvement in the ozone hole?
You know, I'm not an expert on the ozone hole. I've heard a lot of negative comment about that theory of the ozone hole. That is all it is not all that it's cracked up to be. There are some disputes about exactly what is causing the ozone.
In my view, it's Mother Nature, but you go ahead.
Whatever it is. Any chemicals, we actually might, here's the opposite side of the coin. We currently do produce carbon dioxide in our industrial civilization. We are adding to the natural carbon dioxide background, which those who fear that the sky is falling say is heating and warming the earth excessively, and we have global warming. But you know, there are cycles having to do with other things, as far as the earth's orbit and so forth, that periodically bring about ice ages. And there might come a time when we will wish to have more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to stave off an ice age. So if we have unlimited energy, we certainly can produce as much carbon dioxide as we want and stave off an ice age.
That's pretty good reason for doing this. All right, Dr. Eugene Malov is the guest, and we'll take more of your calls right after these amazing words. I'm Hilly Rose, in for Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM.
Call Art Bell on the first-time caller line at 1-775-727-1222. That's 1-775-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Dr. Eugene Malov, and Bob is in Detroit. Good morning, Bob.
Hi. I wonder if I might ask the doctor, Dr. Malov, I've been following Code Fusion for a while.
Code Fusion, I'm sorry. Right.
And I visited your website last night. I saw that you were going to be a scheduled guest.
Good.
And my question for you is this. Can you possibly give an idea where the average person might be able to obtain some of the materials required for these experiments, such as the platinum, the palladium,
and the
nickel, and so forth?
Yes.
And maybe if you could describe a basic apparatus.
I
saw that calcium carbonate was an electrolyte.
Well, potassium carbonate is more.
That's one of them.
Yeah, but let me make it very simple, Bill. We don't want to turn this into an amateur scientist hour, but certainly Infinite Energy Magazine publishes a lot of those nearly hands-on, do-it-yourself sort of things.
Right.
But you know, the let's talk about a what we call light water cells. In other words, a cell that does not use heavy water, so you don't have to buy the heavy water. Heavy water is not incredibly expensive. A kilogram of it, a liter, will be about, say, $350, $400. Okay, but you can do a lot of cold fusion experiments with that. But you'd rather use just ordinary water, very clean water, distilled water, and you put in this electrolyte called potassium carbonate. It's just a chemical, a simple chemical that can be purchased from a chemical supply house.
What's another electrolyte?
Well, there's lithium sulfate, etc. You know, we don't want to get too technical, as I say, but you do is you pass a direct current between the anode,
DC,
with DC, which is the positive electrode and the cathode, the negative one, which would be nickel, let's say. But, you know, you cannot, the point of a cold fusion experiment is to find out if there's excess heat there. This method of measuring the excess heat is the key thing to do, and not to make mistakes as far as the various mistakes that can be made in evaluating the heat of the cell. So this is not a trivial experiment. Okay,
that takes a lot of luck.
It will become trivial, and eventually there will be cathodes supplied by supply houses that will, upon immersion in water and potassium carbonate, will produce the excess heat effect, and any amateur scientist will be able to do it.
Where can you get palladium?
Where can you get palladium is the question.
Oh, there are various supply houses. You know, you can look up in any scientific magazine and or websites and say, you know, chemicals. Right?
Okay.
You can buy palladium. You can buy, of course, it's a precious metal. It is expensive. Nickel is much cheaper. You can buy potassium carbonate. You can buy heavy water. There are vendors all over the place. The materials for cold fusion, that is, the basic materials, are not expensive, are not rare and hard to find.
Okay, let's move along here to Greg in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Good morning, Greg.
Hi, great show today. Anyway, I just have a question. I've heard stories that possibly Hitler was experimenting with cold fusion back during World War II. I was wondering if that was a myth or is there some truth to that?
Don't know about that at all. Apologize. That is one story I have not heard. But there is a very definite historical precedent for cold fusion. In 1926, two scientists by the name of Paneth and Peters conducted experiments which appeared to do something like cold fusion, but it and produce helium. But those experiments, they rejected their own data. Then a gentleman by the name of Tandberg in Sweden got the idea much closer to Pons and Fleischmann for that age and was doing some experiments. But there was really nothing, as far as I know, prior to the Pons-Fleischmann announcement in 1989, and of course they were working on this themselves privately from about 1985 onward, there wasn't really anything like what we've had since 1989 where the phenomenon really has been validated, difficult mm-hmm. as it has been at times to get full reproducibility. We now are in an age where there are plenty of technical papers published on this in both peer-reviewed and non-peer-reviewed journals so that we know the phenomenon is real.
Okay, thank you much. Dr. Malov, it occurs to me that if this thing becomes viable, that we could go clear out to the end of our universe.
Well, now, let's be clear on something. When I wrote the Starflight Handbook back in 1989, it's a John Wiley book, I and Greg Matloff, who is another engineer, we speculated about the various propulsion systems that would take us to the stars. And at the time, it was just the beginning of the cold fusion age. We didn't really talk about it in that book. But you see, to go to the stars, you need some kind of propulsion system and your rocket. Okay, if you are using a rocket, you need fuel. And you need also, we believe, something to eject out of the back of the rocket, some mass. So even if you have a very high energy fuel that is energy source like coal fusion, you still would need to power a rocket. You would need propellant that shoots out the back of the rocket at high speed, and so rockets are limited. It is true, however, that cold fusion devices will radically alter space flight, at least in our solar system. But as far as getting us to the stars, even cold fusion is not particularly powerful enough to do what we really want to do, and there are other systems that I can imagine that would be better than cold fusion. But let's not get into an interstellar flight discussion.
Okay. Well, then let's take a brief pause here at the bottom of the hour, and we will come back and take more of your phone calls for Dr. Eugene Malov talking about cold fusion. Guest tomorrow night, Richard Webster on Feng Shui. I am Hilly Rose, sitting in for Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM.
All over the world, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network. International callers may reach Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye by first dialing the access code for your part of the world. Then, 800-893-0903. That's 800-893-0903. Now, here again is Art Bell.
Hilly Rose sitting in. My guest in this hour is Dr. Eugene Mallove, editor-in-chief of the magazine Infinite Energy. And also he has written any number of books on this area of cold fusion. Before we go back to calls, Doctor, I just wondered, at one time you say that there are an awful lot of scientists here in the United States, and around the world for that matter, who are members of the Flat Earth Society.
Yes.
And I sort of wondered, now you tell us that we're right on the brink of making this thing work. Has the members, the number of the people in the cold Flat Earth Society, are they growing? Are they diminishing? Are they staying the same? In other words, I realize it's very tough and they have interests that to protect themselves, but do you see any change in the scientific community?
In a way, yes. I think what's happening, first of all, a lot of scientists coming and seeing Infinite Energy magazine and other publications relating to cold fusion and seeing news about cold fusion and radio programs, TV programs, videos, movies, what have you. There's a general growing awareness in the part of the open-minded fraction of the scientific culture that there is something here. However, I would say that the people who've been critics, who were closed-minded almost from day one, they're getting rather louder in a way. They are, in a sense, seeing things that they don't like. They are seeing the fact that it is not going away. They predicted that it would die. They predicted that the scientists working on it would find that they were making terrible mistakes. Well, these scientists have not found that they were making terrible mistakes, even though these antagonists of cold fusion believe they're making mistakes. These scientists have checked themselves very carefully and are finding very important new things. And this very much upsets them, and so they get nastier, I think, as time goes on.
Well, it's always the case, isn't it, when you're...
Well, if you remember the Flat Earth Society, you want the Earth to stay flat, right?
Yep. Are you trying to tell us, Doctor, that it's round? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, the world is round.
No, how disappointing. I have other people on the program who have said that that the elite knew about this, and they sent Columbus off, even so, just, you know, find this route to the West Indies. But he knew when he went out that the world was not flat.
By the way, that is my colleague Jed Rothwell, who's a contributing editor to our magazine, has written something about that. It is not often realized that actually the elite of the time of Columbus, it was fairly common knowledge that the Earth was round, okay? Unlike what we've been told in school, that, oh, they thought it was flat. Well, a lot of people might have thought it was flat, but the elite from Greek times onward, due to various astronomical observations and so forth, believed the world was round. They didn't know how big it was, exactly. Some suspected it. But there get to be all these historical myths, and so we just accept them as commonplace. We have to be a little careful on that. For another thing, you know, the Wright brothers mentioned earlier in the program, comparing it to cold fusion and how they were denied for years. Most people are taught in school, oh, the Wright brothers flew in 1903, And one then has the impression it was a big party for them, and they were given a ticker tape parade in Wall Street. Far from it. For 5 years, as we mentioned, they were not recognized. But these very important historical facts about what happened as near as 100 years ago are completely obscured.
Hmm. I tell you, you can't believe anybody, can you? You can't
nope.
believe your teachers. Who can
well,
you believe?
Well, please believe me, though, at least.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And I just, I normally don't push the guests, but, you know, you don't get very commercial here. And I am very excited about your new videotape called...
Fire from Water.
Yeah. Just give us the web address here and we'll move on.
Okay. It's www.infinite-energy.com.
Okay. And if you really want to understand this subject and understand all of the conflict that is going on, they've been very, very upfront and honest about it in this production, I wanted to say.
I must mention another movie that's about to come out. That I worked on a little bit with Professor Keith Johnson of MIT. He's no longer at MIT, but he's involved in the cold fusion field. And Professor Johnson of MIT has produced a movie called Breaking Symmetry. Now, this is not a scientific documentary the way Cold Fusion Fire from Water is, but on May 26th in Cambridge, at the Cambridge Marriott Hotel, for anyone who wants to be there in the evening, both Keith Johnson's movie, Breaking Symmetry, which is a fictional account that touches closely on the reality of what happened at MIE, that will be shown in the Marriott Hotel ballroom, and Cold Fusion Fire from Water will be shown. So the combination of these two films together will be quite powerful, I expect.
By the way, speaking of films, you were the technical advisor on The Saint.
Yes.
The one starring Val Kilmer.
Yep.
And that is all about cold fusion, too, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But, of course, what's portrayed in The Saint is that there is this process called cold fusion, which professor, Elizabeth Shue, a character in the movie, she has it, and there's theft and counter theft and all this other business going on. But it presents it as a fiction. Of course, it was a fiction. The story line was a fiction. But the reality is that it was handled technically well, thanks to the fact that even though the scriptwriters did a great job on the film, there were some errors, and I was allowed to be the technical advisor to correct some of the mistakes that crept in. And so I'm proud that some of the very lines that Elizabeth Shue uttered in the movie about 55 million miles on a gallon of heavy water, these were directly from our input.
Good. All right, let's talk to Sid in New Braunfels, is it, Texas?
New Braunfels.
Braunfels. Okay, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to make an announcement. It's not about cold fusion, but we're talking here about free energy. And
mm-hmm.
I want to tell you of the discovery that I've made.
You have made a discovery.
I have designed,
yes,
with a new science, a torque generator.
Okay.
All the work that we do on this Earth or universe, all the work is done by the torque.
Yes.
Energy does not have to enter into our work equation.
My good friend, could you tell me, very
yeah.
simple, let's not get into equations and theories.
Yeah.
Just tell me, if you will, in a very simple sentence or two, what the device is that you have. What does it do? What is its input and what is its output?
Well, there's no input, and there can be an input. There's a thousand ways in building.
Have you built it?
Yes, I built it, and I've got it to demonstrate.
Well, come up here to Bow, New Hampshire, to New Energy Research Labs.
Well,
whatever it is you have, we will test it.
I cannot do that.
Why not?
I'm 81 years old. I've had two heart attacks in the past 4 months. I've got emphysema on only 16% of my lungs.
Well, okay, well, let's just indicate here that if you want to contact Dr. Malov, you send him some email and...
Or phone.
Or phone, and the phone number is...
603-228-4516.
Okay.
I'm glad to try to help you out.
Okay, thank you. It's amazing to me how many people think they have discovered the ultimate whatever, and they may have. that's probably where we all get into trouble, is we discount things. And what you have said makes a lot of sense, and that is...
We just want to test
show
it.
Me. Yeah.
Test it.
Yeah.
Right, that's all.
And you're not even from the show me state, I tell you.
Right.
Okay. We will go to... Tell me. Oh, okay. We'll go to Adam in Hartford, Connecticut. Hi, Adam. Good morning.
Good morning, Healy.
Yes.
This is Adam.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
From Hartford. I have a question to Dr. Eugene. I mean, this cold fusion brought commercially would bring a revolution to the whole world.
It will. That's correct.
And, you know,
it will.
Energy itself would be pollution.
Energy itself would be pollution?
Yes.
Well,
because if I had a lake, for instance, I lived on a lake, I would have all the energy of the fossil fuel in the world, for
yes,
instance,
that's
available.
Right, you would.
And,
that's
you
right.
Know,
you are absolutely correct, Adam. Things that would, in the past, have been absolutely impossible will become possible, much as with the Internet today and telephones and so forth. We can do things today that were absolutely unthinkable, not to mention 100 years ago, even 20 years ago. We can stay, I am now in contact, but with my little laptop computer that I can take anywhere I want, with hundreds of people, thousands of people, okay? This is an impossibility by previous technologies. Similarly, when we have coal fusion power, okay, we're going to be able to do things that couldn't be done before. For example, you could have, if you had a coal fusion-powered airplane, as an example, and it were just producing tremendous heat and thrust in jet engines, but there was no consumption of fuel, that airplane could stay aloft in almost indefinitely, right?
Yes,
so you could have platforms flying around virtual little countries, flying all over the planet, as far as the fuel goes, no need to refuel.
Yes, but this would bring a revolution.
It would.
Just like the Internet you mentioned.
That's correct.
I mean, moral repercussions.
Yes.
But
isn't that great? Don't you want progress here? That's the important thing. All right, Doctor, we're going to take a brief pause, as we do in radio, and we'll come back and take more questions for you. Dr. Eugene Mallow is my guest. This is Hilly Rose sitting in for Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM. Hilly Rose in for Art Bell. Dr. Eugene Mallow is my guest. And Brian is in Virginia, Minnesota. Is that right, Brian?
Yes, it is.
Where is Virginia?
Northern Minnesota, north of Duluth.
Okay, we're up toward the Canadian border.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. You're on the air.
All righty. I've got this Associated Press article, January 26, 1997, from Avon, Minnesota, the dateline is.
Mm-hmm.
And it reads, an 88-year-old retired entrepreneur received notice that his brainchild, a high-efficiency hydraulic engine that would require no liquid fuel to operate, has a patent pending. The
mm-hmm.
Notice is from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if Mr. Mallow's magazine has done any study on this?
Don't know of it, but if you'll kindly send me, fax me, send me, what have you, the clip, I will look into it, and I would get back to you on that.
All right. The man's name is Raymond Moonen.
Okay, well, send him the information, and he'll look into it. We don't want any more about it now. Thank you. Let's go to, Jim in Anchorage, Alaska. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Hilly. How are you?
I'm well.
Dr. Mayoff, I have two things. Two of the problems in your book and in others that seem to be consistent was the difficulties with, they described it as metal purity.
Yes.
And one other one that few had the opportunity to deal with. At the time that I was reading your book, I was reading...
Fire from Ice.
A big pardon?
The book Fire from Ice.
Yes, but I was reading Williams' biography of Faraday.
Faraday, yes.
And he was an electrochemist, and he had a great deal of work they did with electrolysis,
yes,
and he also had the same problem with the electrodes not working properly, and he was using a 110% solution of water and sulfuric acid. Specific gravity was 110%, or 110, I guess. And what he was able to do, he found that the electrodes, when they formed large bubbles, would not work. And what he was able to do with this was reverse the polarity until the electrodes formed tiny bubbles, film-like, over the surface. And then his units would work fine, and he worked them consistently, and even had them do a runaway.
Right.
After he disconnected the power source.
When you say a runaway, what kind of runaway?
Runaway that they would go to ignition.
Ignition?
Ignition. Yes.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What would they ignite?
That was what I wanted to ask you. Is what they would ignite and how you would control a situation like that.
Well, I'm not clear exactly what you're discussing. I know Michael Faraday was definitely one of the fathers of electrochemistry, and he, I'm not familiar with all his writings, of course. I'm not a student of his. The study of history of his developments. He's a very prominent scientist, very open-minded scientist, who, by the way, had no academic credentials. But I don't know what you're describing here. I presume you're talking about the breakdown of water to produce hydrogen and oxygen, among other things. But this business of ignition or runaway is unclear to me. Again, if you have specific information about something that he observed that was like a runaway, whatever that runaway is, I'd like to be sent that information.
Okay. Let's move along here and talk to Diane, who's in College Station, Texas. Good morning, Diane.
Hello, how are you?
Well.
Well, Dr. Malov knows where I'm coming from, so he might not know what I'm going to talk about, but I'm sure he can tell who I'm going to talk about.
Are you going to talk about the famous
Dr. Bacchus? I work for Dr. Bacchus. I'm an assistant of his.
You're an assistant. Great.
Yes, and
so he's a great man. I hope you think he's a great man.
Oh, he's a great man. He just had a bypass surgery for the second time and has come through wonderfully. He's working again.
Oh, my God. I didn't know he was having bypass surgery. Because
he's actually, I think, one of 50 people who's actually had it done twice.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to bring up the fact he was involved with cold fusion early
yes,
on, as you know.
He still is.
And he was almost destroyed because of it here at Texas.
In what way, Diane? How was he destroyed?
Well, what happened was he announced his announcement of he had a grad student who was working on it similarly,
mm-hmm.
and their announcement on their cold fusion results came directly after the Utah announcement.
That's right.
And there was an entire over 30 members of the Texas A&M Chemistry Department wrote a letter to the president asking him basically to be removed.
That's correct.
Because he was doing, quote, you know, voodoo science.
Right.
They started calling him an alchemist.
That's right.
They tried to embarrass him. I mean, in not only in the letters to the local paper, but in the letters
mm-hmm.
to the university paper.
Mm-hmm.
And spent 2 years just trying to stay afloat. I mean, his legal costs were enormous.
I'm very familiar with that, and by the way, that's that part of, obviously not the full story, but a significant portion of cold fusion fire from water goes into Bacchus's difficulties with the university, and of course he triumphed in the end. He was fully absolved, but of course the people there at Texas A&M in the chemistry department and elsewhere who did not want this new science being experimented with, the Flat Earth Society people, these people still are unrepentant. I've talked to some of them. I've interviewed them. I have their precious words on tape, and we will eventually publish the full record of this.
Yeah, I was glad. I was going to ask you just if you can envision a time when he would be publicly just exonerated.
You know, sometimes the people who lose a scientific war never really admit that they were wrong. They will claim in the future that they knew it all along, and they will try to marginalize and devalue the contributions of those who were in the field all along, such as Professor Bockris. Professor John Bockris is one of the greatest electrochemists in the world, and he happens to be, in my estimation, one of the greatest scientists. You know, he stood up for measurements that showed anomalous behavior, namely the tritium, which is a signature of cold fusion, one of the early signatures that was clearly an indication. This is a form of hydrogen that was clearly present, and Gary Taubes, the so-called science journalist who claimed that this was fraud, okay, or that it was not fraud by Bockris, but adulteration of experiments by an ambitious graduate student.
Yes.
This was one of the most outrageous claims, and it continues to be repeated, even though full exoneration occurred in the case of Bockris, and absolute impossibility of adulteration to produce the effects that were seen has now been proved. But this propaganda that was launched in 1990 still continues like a bad odor, and continues to be mentioned by journalists and others who feel that they want to beat up on cold fusion.
Well,
it's a terrible
thing. The one slight that they continue to give him, which I find reprehensible,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that, you know, he was a distinguished professor.
Yeah, I'm running out of time here, Diane. I've got 10 seconds.
Okay, is that they will not give him the Professor Emeritus title.
Well, he can live without that.
Okay, thank you. And unfortunately, I can't live without the station breaks here, so Dr. Mello will come back and do the final hour in just a few minutes here. In for Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM, I am Hilly Rose.
And I'll keep this world from dragging me down.
The Kingdom of Nye is open at 1-775-727-1295. That's 1-775-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Hilly Rose sitting in, and my guest is Dr. Eugene F. Malov, Editor-in-Chief of Infinite Energy Magazine. We're talking about cold fusion. And, Doctor, maybe I'm naive here, or maybe there's something I don't understand. Twice it has come up in the program about being alchemists, and what's the problem with turning lead into gold? Well, what I mean by that is there something wrong with being an alchemist?
Well, certainly there is in the cold fusion war. In fact, the term alchemy has been used by the critics to disparage cold fusion. Alchemy, as many of your listeners know, was the ancient science or mystical endeavor that tried to produce the gold from lead, or gold from base metals using philosopher's stone. There were other mystical qualities such as immortality and other things blended into alchemy. There are many, many books written about alchemy. But interestingly, some of the great scientists that we ascribe to our classical era, like Isaac Newton and Robert Boyle and others, were alchemists themselves. They dabbled or actually dealt with alchemy in a hands-on way, in a very, very big way. Now, it is normally understood that the practice of alchemy, the attempt to make gold from lead and mercury, was something that led to chemistry. That is, all that dabbling led to chemistry, but there was nothing to it. There was no such production of gold from lead. And that may well be true in large quantities. But in the cold fusion era, where we are fighting a scientific establishment, they use that term alchemy to challenge us. Because, indeed, cold fusion scientists have found the transmutation of elements, not like batches of gold coming out of lead, but they have found changes in elements. Why is this surprising? It is surprising because we understood prior to cold fusion results that it was impossible, without going to very high energies in stars or in accelerators, to change the identity of elements. And so therefore, to say that one is transmuting, one is changing elements, and seeing new elements appear in very mild conditions, such as in cold fusion experiments, this is akin to alchemy. Mm-hmm. But I would call it modern alchemy. That's what it is.
It's just positive. That was the point I was trying to make.
It is positive. Well, they use it as a negative term because alchemy is supposed to be hogwash. In other words, the ancient attempt to make gold out of lead was considered a hogwash and a futile effort, whereas today they look at cold fusion experiments and say that too is hogwash, therefore make the comparison with the ancient alchemists.
Yeah, but I think this is right on the point, is that these folks are living back in the Flat Earth Society days.
They are.
And they haven't moved on into, you know, they don't dream. If you say something can't happen, it's not going to happen.
That's right.
And if you, in any field, and if you move ahead and somebody tells you you can't do it, well, boy, my wife, if anybody ever tells her it can't be done, she's going to do it. And that makes her succeed in a lot of ways. And
well, that has made cold fusion people succeed in a lot of ways. We were put down and still are being put down, but we are confident of the results, and we know that it is a matter of time before they will be accepted by a new generation that will not be bound by the propaganda of these flat earth people. You know, when Wegener at the early part of this century speculated and measured results that told him that the continents had once been together. And of course that theory that the continents could drift back in 1912 and all the way up to the late 1950s, early 60s was considered nonsense by the establishment of geophysics. Because how could continents move? Unthinkable. And yet we now know that the continents are moving, and we sort of know why they are moving. They're on plates, and it's called plate tectonics. So a whole new paradigm had to be invented before a major idea like continental drift was accepted.
Of course, I live in California. We know that the Earth moves all the time.
Oh, of course, it does move.
I have a fax here, and I'm a big train buff. I mean,
okay.
my idea of having fun, like I go to Europe and I'll for 3 weeks, I'll just
Wonderful.
Ride every train I can find.
Wonderful.
But anyway, this guy wants to know how the heat generated from cold fusion could be used to propel locomotives.
Oh, easy.
Well, wait a minute. If a turbine is used, will it be powered by superheated air or steam? What a grand idea to see the rebirth of steam locomotives on the rails. I'm all for that.
Will we have steam locomotives powered by cold fusion, okay, with no coal belching from the stacks or ore or diesel oil, but we will also have cold fusion-powered steam cars. You see, you can take the heat of cold fusion and use it in many ways. You could make steam to drive turbines or reciprocating engines, and that would be that. You know, that's basically one way. Another way is to do it thermoelectrically. In other words, convert the cold fusion heat in a high efficiency. Most thermoelectric conversion is not high efficiency, but perhaps we can develop those, or waste the heat. Basically go directly to electricity from cold fusion reactions. Many things could be done. But by the way, you're a train buff? Excellent.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
There's something that's in between trains and planes, and that is called maglev.
Right. I've ridden them.
They literally levitate above the track.
Right.
Magnetic fields. And that's really, it's almost a misnomer to call maglev a train because it's actually more like an electromagnetic plane.
Well, I've ridden them from Paris down to Saint-Tropez.
I didn't know they had magnet operation.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Are you thinking in terms of just a monorail, or was this really a maglev?
Well, I don't know what a real maglev is. I know that's what they told me about.
It levitates.
That it levitates up off the rail, and as a result of that, there's no drag, and so they can make what is normally an eight-hour trip from Paris down to the Riviera, they can do it in 4 or 5 hours.
Amazing.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, this couldn't be done either, as a lot of people said, but somehow, there it is.
Somehow progress is made.
Yeah, don't argue with me. It can't be done while you're riding on the train. So.
Right.
All right, let's move along here and talk to Jeff in Portland. Good morning, Jeff.
Hi.
Hi.
First, I'd like to say that I work a graveyard shift here at a gas station, and I'm on your show every night, and you're doing a great job.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
And what I'm calling in for is to say, does your guest foresee, in my lifetime, seeing my job going the way of the blacksmith?
Yes, your job will go away, but you will have a better job. You know, let me make an analogy here. There aren't very many companies, maybe there aren't any, that are making mechanical typewriters any longer. So the typewriter industry got destroyed by the personal computer and word processing, all right? We use other kinds of printers today, and we do not need mechanical linkages or even electromechanical linkages for typewriters, okay? So there's a much larger industry now devoted, obviously, to personal computers. Many more people type with personal computers than ever typed before with mechanical typewriters. Now, people who now pump gas will not be pumping gas anymore in the coal fusion age when it is in full swing. But what they will be doing, undoubtedly, if they want to still work at these stations, there will be comfort stations, and instead of having these highly flammable fuels that we pump into cars and eventually kill people with when they collide with one another on the highway, even coal fusion cars will collide, we won't have these flames, but the people at the comfort stations, such as you, will be having more space for food and comfort and showers and God knows what else.
But I would say to you, Jeff, don't quit your job because I think you'll be there for a long time. This isn't going to happen overnight.
Right.
All right, thank you. And we're going to take another brief pause so we can hear from Art Bell, and then we will continue right here with Dr. Mellov. I am Art. No, I'm not Art. I'm Hilly Rose sitting in for Art Bell.
Cassette copies of this program, dial 1-800-917-4278. Now, back to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Hilly Rose sitting in, and let me remind you that the new issue of Fate magazine just came out on the stands this week with a picture of Art Bell on the cover, and there is a story about Art Bell. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, so I don't know what it says. But for all you dedicated Art Bell fans, there's another way to find out more about the man. So be sure and pick up a copy. Let's get back to our phone calls. We're talking to Dr. Eugene Mellov, and we're talking about cold fusion. And let's go to Cecil in Gainesville, Florida. Good morning, Cecil.
How you doing?
Well.
Dr. Mellov, I have a couple of questions for you that they're both on the same topic, but kind of not really.
Okay.
I guess my questions are basically, is there any way that they can incorporate this? Well, actually, have they tested this theory in a zero-gravity environment?
No. It would be a good idea to do that because I believe, I don't think that the cold fusion reactions would particularly change very much in space, although liquids operate differently. So if you have an electrochemical cell in space, you'd have to be concerned about how it was put together and the fluids floating and so forth. But indeed, I do feel that space power systems, even should we get the, and as I hope we have our Freedom Space Station up there, it will, it now is outfitted or will be outfitted with large solar panels, and these are very bulky and problematic. Mm-hmm. I think eventually these panels will be removed and we will have simple cold fusion-based electric generators aboard such stations.
Well, you would tend to think that cold fusion would be more of a logical choice anyways. My second question is could cold fusion in any way be used as a weapon of mass destruction?
I don't think so, but then again, it is new physics. It is, there are nuclear reactions occurring. We do not see evidence of runaway in any sense. But on the other hand, what do we know? We already have nuclear weapons galore on this planet. And nuclear weapons are not all that hard to develop for any country, as long as they can produce uranium-235 in pure enough form, or plutonium. We have plenty of other weapons that are very dangerous, so to speculate about what might be coming out of cold fusion, I think even though we should do that and we should be on guard, we have not seen anything yet in it that looks especially ominous.
Or maybe then the government would get involved.
Yeah, probably.
Well, you know, there's a deep irony here. There is one aspect of cold fusion that should interest the government as far as its weapon systems go. And this is this shows how absurd the whole cold fusion war has been. As I told you in the, earlier, tritium, which is a radioactive form of hydrogen, okay, it's very short-lived. It only lives of half of it gets destroyed automatically by decay in 12 and a half years. Now, this was detected early on in some cold fusion experiments. It's not an especially dangerous compound. It could be shielded against, and commercial cold fusion reactors would certainly not want to have it, and we would just eliminate it, but or shield it, or whatever. But in the early days, this was found, and it continues to be found in some cold fusion experiments, even at our Los Alamos National Laboratory. Now, tritium happens to be one of the ingredients in thermonuclear weapons. In other words, a hydrogen bomb is made by having a fission bomb go off and, heat up to millions of degrees the fuel, which is tritium and heavy hydrogen. Now, tritium is something that the U.S. government needs, and it is willing to spend billions of dollars to recreate a tritium production facility, while at the same time completely ignoring the fact that tritium might be generated in specialized cold fusion apparatus in a much simpler and cheaper way. This would not necessarily, by the way, give India or other countries a leap ahead in hydrogen bomb technology. So I don't want to make a big deal about this, but it is true that that one fact of cold fusion has some military aspect to it.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Malov, there is something I've been meaning to ask you all evening and just didn't have a chance to.
Okay.
The doctors who originally discovered cold fusion.
Professor Fleischmann.
Yeah. You indicated to us earlier that Fleischmann has gone to France, changed his nationality.
No, a Pons.
Oh, was it Pons that did that?
Stanley Pons.
Okay.
Right.
What's happened to Fleischmann? Is he still
Fleischmann
here?
Fleischmann is still very much a part of the field. He is living in England, where he was from, and he's living in the same place where he's been all along. Basically, he's totally confident of all the results that have been produced. He's a jolly fellow. He's got a very nice human outlook. Pons is a person who took this with less humor. He perhaps was a less secure man, although he's a dear friend. He did feel very badly treated, and he was badly treated by the scientific establishment. And so both he and Dr. Fleischmann went to southern France, and they did work for a number of years under the a Toyota affiliate called IMRA, and they did work successfully on various cold fusion experiments that were pushed and which show even more spectacular results. So the short of it is this, Pons is dejected, I think, and out of the field. He doesn't really want to be be communicated with, frankly, whereas Martin Fleischman is still very much in the field, and he does attend meetings and so forth.
Didn't they originally put a lot of their own money into this
development? They did. They spent about $100,000 U.S. dollars of their own money in experiments that were conducted in Utah. Fleischman used to, he was retired from the University of Southampton in England, and he would visit his colleague, Pons, at University of Utah, and they would do these experiments. These were done very quietly, and it only came out when they submitted a proposal to the Department of Energy, to a secret proposal, to continue this work. And one of the Department of Energy reviewers gave this proposal to, I think somewhat unethically, to Dr. Stephen Jones at Brigham Young University. And that began a rivalry because Jones was working on something similar, and there got to be all kinds of complications that forced the press conference on March 23rd prematurely.
All right, sir. We are coming into the last segment of the show, mm-hmm. so please stick with me, and we will continue talking about cold fusion and what the future could really be like. Sitting in for Art Bell, I am Hilly Rose on Coast to Coast AM.
This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network. To the Kingdom of Nye is open at 1-775-727-1295. That's 1-775-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Hilly Rose sitting in for Art, and we're talking with Dr. Eugene Malov, editor-in-chief and publisher of the bi-monthly Infinite Energy magazine. Dr. Malov, now that we're coming down to the end of this program, and you've made these hours just fly by. You do a wonderful job of explaining this. Is there anything that we haven't asked you, and certainly we've covered a lot of territory, but is there anything new in the field or anything important in the field of cold fusion that we haven't already covered?
Well,
the answer is no, that's fine.
Well, no, there are some things. First of all, I'd like to highlight some upcoming events, if I may. The new things, such as the Conference on Future Energy, which will be occurring, as I said, at the Bethesda, Maryland Holiday Inn on April 28th through the May 1st. That's coming up. That will allow people in the Washington area or wherever they're coming from to get more familiar with some of these new ideas in physics and energy. Also, the production of the joint showing of these two wonderful films, The Cold Fusion Fire from Water and MIT Professor Keith Johnson's Breaking Symmetry at the Cambridge Marriott, coming up on May 26th in the evening. We invite people to come. But as far as new technologies, you know, having cut my teeth on the original cold fusion claim, I never intended to sort of speak, become a cold fusion researcher. It just happened that I did, because I was there at the right place at the right time, or the wrong place at the right time, whatever, at MIT. My eyes have been opened in a much greater sense, and I now see other developments that are related, that I consider to be related to cold fusion. And we might want to discuss very briefly. There are some aspects of water that are far more profound than even the major cold fusion claim. And they need to be investigated. There's no doubt about this. There are health effects that have been observed by some individuals and groups that we have written about in a preliminary way in one of our magazines, issue 18, I believe, electrochemical activation of water, that seems to produce health benefits of an extraordinary nature. Now, these technologies are in use already in Japan and in Russia. They are most amazing. What you have, in effect, in that technology is the ability of what looks like ordinary water, albeit processed electrochemically, to be a very potent sterilizing agent. And they use it for curing many types of ailments, such as gangrene and diabetic conditions on limbs, that are not practiced in this country. And I would like to, in the future, discuss in our magazine and elsewhere how that technology in water is evolving.
Okay. It blows my mind here just thinking about it.
Oh, it is. Now, there's another aspect which is even more heretical, and by the way, the equal fun of by the critics. It's called memory in water. And I'm not willing to say that this actually is real, although I suspect it is because the scientific evidence for it has built up.
What does this mean, memory
in
water?
Well, Dr. Benveniste, Jacques Benveniste, the famous French immunologist, just before a cold fusion, he published a paper in Nature magazine saying that he had tested water that was diluted. That is, agents were put in, toxic agents were put into water, and the water was diluted many, many, many times, such that the final water, was so dilute that the probability of even one molecule of the toxic agent being in the final batch was about 1 out of 1,000,000. So in effect, what you had at the very end was pure water. And yet, there appeared to be something like a memory effect, whereby that pure water applied to cells would create effects on those cells as though the molecules were still there.
Okay, so we're talking about like metal has a memory. It's not a human memory.
Not a human memory, but a remembrance, so to speak, of the molecule. Now, there doesn't appear by conventional physics or physics understandings to be any way that this can happen, and yet the experimental data show it. And he has provided even more provocative material that suggests that these types of processes, this memory in water process, which can be investigated experimentally, is something whereby cells in the body communicate with one another and chemical reactions are mediated. So, to say the least, this memory of water controversy, which is about as intense as cold fusion, although it doesn't have as many people working on it, this is a very important thing. And in the future, we will cover that. As I say, I don't ratify it, but on the other hand, I think it should be investigated very, very objectively and at a high priority.
Now, how does that relate to cold fusion? You said
it may not be related, but although it is related in the sense that it again shows something, some properties of water that were previously thought of as being nonsensical, but nonetheless appear to have experimental basis. By the way, the whole field of homeopathic medicine, which does partake of this, that's why Benveniste got into it. He wasn't a homeopathic physician, but homeopathic medicine for two centuries, has relied on these dilutions, and this was merely an attempt to do a scientific investigation which appears to have produced positive results.
There's so much we don't know, and if only we could open our minds and move forward.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick call here from Dan in Spring Valley. Hi, Dan. You're on the air at the Art Bell Show.
Hi, Haley. I was just wondering if this is, like, advanced far enough so that maybe you could make, like, little home generators,
That's where it will go.
It will?
Yes. The whole future of energy on this planet will be that of distributed power systems. We're not going to have the grid. The grid is going to wither and die, just like the horse and buggies left us. We're going to have power sources in homes for generating electricity. That's where it's going.
How far do you think it is away from getting to that point?
Well, I would like to think it's closer than we think. It seems like such a wonderful vision. I don't rule out that a significant amount of this can begin to occur in the next decade.
Wow.
And perhaps, actually like the computer revolution, which really occurred in a span of, within a span of 20 years, we had a revolution in technology called the personal computer revolution. I personally believe that the same intensity of revolution, perhaps even greater, can occur with coal fusion once the first products enter the marketplace. In the first early days of the personal computer revolution, they were just toys and kits, little sort of hobbyist kits between 1975 and roughly 1980. But when that really began to take off, and there were things like the Apple computer and so forth, then we had the beginnings of a revolution.
Okay, thank you, sir. And Dr. Miller, we'll take a final couple of calls for you right after these exciting messages here on Coast to Coast AM. From Obion County, Texas. Hi, Perry.
Yeah. I wanted to ask the Dr. Mallow about, was he aware of Dr. Stevens Greer's work on the Oprah Unity machine? Art Bell's had him on his show several times as a guest. He's supposed to unveil one pretty soon there.
Well, I've heard something about that, and I don't know enough about it at the moment to really have a intelligent discussion about it on the air, so we'll just keep that under discussion. I can tell you that Dr. Greer will be a speaker at the upcoming conference on future energy at the Holiday Inn in Bethesda, Maryland. So perhaps we'll hear a little bit about that device from Dr. Greer at the time.
All right, let's move along here to talk with Al in Albuquerque. Good morning, Al.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot tonight they've been saying we really don't know what's going on. And I think that's because we lack a grand unified theory.
We lack full understanding of what's going on in coal fusion processes, but I don't think we need a grand unified theory. We just need whatever can explain coal fusion will explain it, and perhaps we will use it without having it fully understood, much as primitive peoples used fire and medicines of various kinds from the natural forests without knowing exactly what they were doing or how they
right.
were working.
I understand. Okay. Another thing is I notice a difference between coal fusion and warm superconductivity. When that came out, everybody got on the bandwagon.
Yes.
And, you know,
it worked very easily. The blessing for high-temperature superconductivity, or warm superconductivity, as you would say, was that it was very easy to reproduce. Coal fusion didn't have that blessing. Had it had that blessing, it would have been a different course. It was reproducible enough so that, in the beginning, such that good people got the results and stuck to it. But it allowed the critics a very easy out to say, oh, it's a mess, and no one can reproduce it, and it's this and it's that. And that's how it all got off to a bad start.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on here to Tom in Fresno. Good morning, Tom.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
You're very loud and clear.
I can barely hear you.
Well, it's important for you to talk up.
Okay. Professor, it's a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Well, don't elevate me to professor. I'm a doctor.
Okay.
If that is an elevation, doctor.
There's a situation that the scientists have overlooked, and that's the fact that functional entities operate on the basis of a scheme, symmetry, methodology, and system. Mm-hmm. And Jay Forrester of MIT points out that man lives, works within systems, but even so, the principles governing the behavior systems are not widely understood.
Okay.
So, in other words, science works to describe systematic and schematic morphologic features of it.
Yes.
But they don't understand what the scheme, symmetry, methodology, and system are.
Okay, these are words,
now,
but what are you getting at?
Okay, what I'm getting at is that Watson, co-discoverer of the AA helix, says that the growth and division of cells are based upon the same laws of chemistry that control the behavior of molecules outside of cells.
Yes.
So, in other words, the chemistry, chemicals, and living cells operate on the same scheme, symmetry, methodology, and system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you just mentioned a minute ago, before the commercial, that you were going into this other field for information that you thought had some analogies, homologies, or homogeneities.
Right.
Is that correct?
I didn't say I was going into it. I said we will be considering it. We will be looking at the evidence for it because it's an issue or set of issues connected with water, scientific claims that need to be investigated. And they might have some bearing on, they might be interrelated.
Okay, thank you. And let's go along here and talk with John in Westchester County, New York. Hi, John.
Yes, hi, Haley. You know, there's a certain amount of controversy over this conference on free energy that Dr. Malov has not mentioned to the listeners.
Well, I tried to, but what do you...
Well, last month I received a mailing from the Integrity Research Institute stating that this conference was going to be held at the Dean Acheson Auditorium at the State Department.
That's
and
correct.
It was going to be co-hosted by the Secretary of State's Open Forum.
Yes,
program.
That was correct. It was.
Why is it being moved to Bethesda, and why is the State Department no longer involved?
Okay, before the doctor answers, let me say this was addressed much earlier. You probably didn't hear it.
Yeah, you missed it.
But he did indeed address it, so he's not obfuscating or trying to avoid it. But go ahead and answer.
Basically, a critic who had just been hired, he's a physicist with the Arms Control Agency in the State Department, had... found out about this conference just soon after he joined, and he was outraged because none of this makes any sense to him, even though he proved publicly in Atlanta, Georgia at the American Physical Society meeting that he didn't know anything about the content. He went down the list of speakers and he was making fun of it before 1,000 physicists, but he took action to get it moved, from the State Department to he just killed it there. And then Tom Vallone of the Integrity Research Institute had it moved to the Commerce Department. He is a member, by the way, a patent examiner, so he had some contacts there. Then strings were pulled by these nasty physicists, and apparently they got it killed at the Commerce Department too, at which time Tom Vallone had it arranged that we will have it on April 28th, 29th, 30th, and May 1st at the Bethesda, Maryland Holiday Inn.
Okay, John, does that answer your question?
Well, were there any problems with people complaining that the State Department wanted U.S. citizens to register their Social Security numbers in
there was an aspect of that, but that wasn't the reason it was moved. No. It had to do with a physicist who was very prejudiced against the topic, the subject matter, and he was unwilling to, he felt that it was his duty as a newly hired worker within the State Department to get this thing pulled out, as he put it, so that it would not embarrass the Secretary of State.
Okay, thank you much. And let's see if we get a final call in here from Contra Costa County and Ezra. Good morning.
Ezra here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, Doctor, some hour ago or so, you mentioned something, inference about carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. In the air, and I just wondered if you would answer this question for me in your mind. Which came first, hydrocarbon or carbohydrates?
Which came first? In what sense came first?
Well, there's a good reason for that question, and I want to make a statement afterward.
Well, we have to understand the question.
Which really don't
came
understand
first,
the question.
Carbohydrate or hydrocarbon?
I mean, hydrocarbons exist on the Earth. And
we're burning hydrocarbons now by the tons in our cars. What about the carbohydrates? Which came first?
Well, you know, it's a question of the origin of oil, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, but it is. It's exactly what I'm getting at, the origin of life. Where did it come from?
Well, the origin of life, we do not have any proof of exactly where it is.
Well, you don't have any proof of evolution, not one tiny iota, and that's the only other thing there can be except a creation, right?
Well, that's your opinion, and you're welcome to
it. It's not a matter of an opinion, it's a matter of science.
Well,
true science.
That's another subject.
You mentioned Faraday a while ago, which is in the same subject. Mr. Michael Faraday, a great man, friend of mine, by the way.
Michael Faraday?
Was a solid creationist.
1846, you're that old?
That's right.
How old are you?
148.
Really?
No, I'm kidding, of course.
Well, anyway,
I just wanted to get through and ask you the important question. Who made you? Why were you made? And what is your duty? Those are the three questions Noah Webster said constitute the whole business
of
life.
That's a subject for another day.
It certainly is. Okay, thank you very much. Whew, I tell you.
Hey, we had to have one person attack me.
Yeah, well.
Well, he didn't really attack me. He just asked a question, and it's a worthy question.
Of course, it is a worthy question.
For another program.
Well, there are many, many, many programs we have had and ours has had on this subject.
Right.
So, I think we have to leave it for somebody else another time.
Right.
All right, Dr. Malov, once again, you have been superlative in your presentation.
Well, thank you.
Well, I was really concerned that maybe you'd get very technical on me.
Well, I didn't do that, did I?
No, you did not.
Okay.
And that's why I'm complimenting you.
All right.
Otherwise, I'd say you're a bum and get rid of you, you know?
All right.
No, that's really fine. And, of course, I do want to point out to people, I didn't do this excepting in the first hour, that Dr. Malov is a highly degreed individual in his fields. He has a Master of Science degree, Bachelor of Science degree in Aeronautical and Astronautical Engineering from the MIT, Science Doctorate in Environmental Health Sciences, Air Pollution Control Engineering from Harvard University, and on and on and on. Places he's worked, Hughes Research Laboratories, MIT Lincoln Laboratory. What I'm sort of saying here is we get people who come on these programs with all kinds of theories that don't have substance or they have no background, the people who present them. And to be talking to someone with this kind of background is a real pleasure because he sort of knows where he's coming from. So, Dr. Malov, quickly, I've only got about 10 seconds here. Do you want to give us your web address again?
Okay, www.infinite-energy.com. The phone number is 603-228-4516 in New Hampshire.
Very good. Sir, thank you for spending the night with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Okay, tomorrow night, Feng Shui. Richard Webster will be here, and just could change your whole life, friends, and it's very simple to do. Sitting in for Art Bell, I am Hilly Rose, wishing you a kind and gentle night.